I was so excited about singing the song that I forgot that the guys were supposed to hand out the half sheets there. Did everybody get one? Anybody miss one? All right, just some of the guys, some of the young people in the front row. I think we've got extras there. We can hand those out. If you need one, go ahead and raise your hand. We try to make sure at least all the adults and teenagers get them first. We are in the book of Ecclesiastes tonight. Now, let me just say, when we started to do the snapshots, I'm trying to do them chronologically as far as the order of events taking place, okay? Obviously, Ecclesiastes does not come after Joel in any way of the imagination, okay? But when I planned out all the different days that each book would be taught, and when I asked Pastor Joel and I asked my dad to teach different ones, I did not know that we were going to have to cancel a Sunday because of weather. And so that just kind of threw everything in a turmoil there. And so Ecclesiastes was supposed to be back with Proverbs and Song of Solomon. But because of the weather, and then of course I was gone in Israel, we're kind of jumping back a little bit, okay? All right, so we're jumping back to Solomon. But as we're going through, these things, again, we're not going through them in the order that the books are in the Bible, okay? We're going through them, or we're trying to go through them chronologically as far as the events that are taking place, okay? So again, so like we did Joel, but if you think about it, Joel and some of the other minor prophets are actually within the time period of like the book of 2 Kings, right? So we did 2 Kings, but you can't do part of 2 Kings, you have to do all of 2 Kings, right? As a book, right? That's what we're doing, scripture snapshots, right? So we had to do all of 2 Kings. And then some of the minor prophets that like Joel and some of these others, Amos and things like that, they're kind of in that time period. They're in those books. And so we'll try to remind you that this book is taking place during this time period, okay? Because I want you to be able to kind of see when these books are not just in the order of scripture, but the time period of which the events are taking place in those books, okay? So thinking of along that line, obviously there are three books that Solomon are attributed to Solomon. We have the book of Proverbs, the book of Ecclesiastes, and the book of Song of Solomon. And really, they're in the order of the events taking place, it's most likely Song of Solomon was probably one of the first books, because the book of Proverbs is a gathering. It's getting all of the proverbs that Solomon wrote and many others, and so that would have been throughout much of his reign. So Song of Solomon would probably be one of the first, if we want to call the books of the Bible. And then Proverbs deals with a lot of the sayings and the proverbs that he gave over his time as king. But Ecclesiastes is actually the last book dealing with Solomon, right? So this is the last book that is dealing with Solomon here. So again, just very quickly, I've got a couple fun facts here. See if you can guess. I'm going to have you guess these things to see if you're up on your Ecclesiastes. All right, here we go. According to Ecclesiastes, what increases with knowledge? Now, again, you got to think Ecclesiastes, right? What increases with knowledge? Anybody want to take a guess? It's not wisdom. Again, you got to think Ecclesiastes, not Proverbs, right? You'd be close. Not vanity. Actually, it is sorrow. According to Ecclesiastes, sorrow increases with knowledge. And again, we're going to see how that plays out in Ecclesiastes. Here's another one. Fill in the blank here. One generation passeth away, and another generation cometh, but the blank abideth forever. According to Ecclesiastes, what abides forever? Was that the Lord? That's a good guess, but it's not the Lord. Miss Terry? The earth, right? The earth abideth forever, right? Here's another one. What does a fool walk in? Again, according to Ecclesiastes, not Proverbs. What does a fool walk in? No, it's a good guess. What does a fool walk in? Darkness. A fool walks in darkness, right? What is better than precious ointments? Some of you should get that. This one. What is better than precious ointment? Again, according to Ecclesiastes. Aaron? What's that? No? Anybody else? What is better than precious ointment? Boy, I am stumping you guys tonight. A good name. A good name is better than precious ointment. Ecclesiastes 7:1. Here's a good one. I'm sure you're all going to get this. What is better than a dead lion? What's better than a dead lion? What? An alive one? No, he's dead. What's better than a dead lion? According to Ecclesiastes. Two dead lions? Not quite. Right? A living dog is better than a dead lion. Think about it. What good's a dead lion do? He's worthless, right? But at least a dog, it's alive, right? I didn't say it. Solomon did, all right? You know? Here's a good one. What is there no end to? What is there no end to? Yes, sir? Well, that's a good answer. Life, right? Nope, that's not the right one, though. That's a good answer, though. What is there no end to? Miss Patty? Nope. If you're in school, you're going to like this one. All the hands just went down. What? The answer is the making many books. Making many books. There's no end to it, right? All right, last one here. How many times is vanity mentioned in Ecclesiastes? Do you know or are you just taking a guess? Okay, what's your guess? No, not quite. No, not quite. How many times is the vanity mentioned in Solomon, or not Solomon, by Solomon in Ecclesiastes? Malachi? Well, that's definitely closer than the previous answer, right? It's actually over 30 times vanity is mentioned in the book of Ecclesiastes. There's only 12 chapters in Ecclesiastes, and over 30 times vanity is mentioned, all right? Everybody's got a paper? I did not keep a paper. Is there an extra one somewhere? You got an extra one? Thank you. You got 62 of them? That's great. I only printed off 40, but you know. It's all right. He's homeschooled. No, just. I'm sorry, Landon. That's all right. Okay. So we're looking at Ecclesiastes, right? Again, we mentioned we were going through a Song of Solomon, that Song of Solomon is one of the, what is referred to as the Megaloth books or the five scrolls that are read during different time periods. And of course, Ecclesiastes is also one of those. Ecclesiastes is read at the Feast of Tabernacles, right? And again, that's that week-long celebration where they would build those temporary shelters to remind them of their wanderings in the wilderness by the forefathers, okay? So this was when Ecclesiastes would be read. Now, the theme of Ecclesiastes, I would say, is pretty obvious. It is life under the sun is vanity. Life under the sun is vanity. Well, what does that mean? What does that mean, life under the sun is vanity? Does that mean that all living is vanity? If all living is vanity, then what's the point of living, right? So we have to, again, looking at what Solomon is saying here, when he uses this phrase, life under the sun is vanity. And by the way, notice how he begins the book of Ecclesiastes, the words of the preacher, the son of David, king in Jerusalem, vanity of vanities, saith the preacher, vanity of vanities, all is vanity. This is going to be a great book, isn't it? I mean, this is how he starts off. Right? Vanity of vanities, saith the preacher, vanity of vanities, all is vanity. Well, what does the word vanity mean? Vanity means it's empty. It's an emptiness. There's a void of any lasting fulfillment, right? There's an emptiness to it. There's a void of lasting fulfillment. So think with me when he says that life under the sun is vanity, right? The idea here is not all life is vanity. If all life is vanity, what's the purpose of living? But the idea here is living on earth without any regard for God. Living on earth without any desire to follow God is vanity. It's emptiness. There's no lasting fulfillment. And again, he is going to, he's going to really explain this, right? And what's sad about, let me just kind of go through here a little bit first on this idea of what he's saying, because Solomon's life was filled with so many things. And yet at the end of his life, what do we find? We find an empty king. A man that looks at life and says it's all vanity. And yet we would look at Solomon and we would think, man, this guy had everything, right? I mean, he had it all. I mean, he had wealth beyond your wildest dreams. He had anything that he wanted. The problem was, and look, we're going to be honest about some things here, right? Solomon was in his early years as a king. I believe Solomon loved the Lord. And I believe Solomon had a heart for God. But here was the problem with Solomon. He didn't take his own advice. We're going to jump to the end here real quick because I want you to see what he says. Notice in Ecclesiastes chapter 12, in verse number 13, he says, "Let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter." So after Solomon has gone through this whole thing, he says, here's the conclusion. "Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the whole duty of man." Let me ask you a question. That's great advice, isn't it? But did Solomon follow it? No, he did not. Solomon did not follow this advice. Solomon was an amazing king if we think about it in terms of the earthly idea of a king. He had great wealth. People came from all over the world to hear his wisdom and to see his wealth. But Solomon had a lot of problems. Number one, Solomon was a womanizer. He had 700 wives and 300 concubines. If you go back and read what God commanded the Israelites, he told them that they were not to take wives from other nations. And yet, what do we find Solomon doing? Taking wives from other nations. Now, you can look at it and say, well, that was kind of the culture of the day. That's what kings would do to secure their kingdom, to make sure that there would be in league with other nations. It doesn't matter what culture says. God said, don't do it. God said, don't do it. I guarantee you, God could have taken care of Solomon's kingdom better than all the leagues he could have made through all the marriages that he had. But Solomon chose to do his own thing, his own way. And we find a man that becomes a womanizer. We find a man who was a horrible father. I mean, his children turn against him. His children basically care nothing about him. In fact, when we read through Solomon's life, there are only four things that we're told to his credit. Think about this. Only four things that we can find that are told to Solomon's credit. His choice of an understanding heart when he was at Gibeon and God came to him and said, what do you want? And he said, I want an understanding heart. His prayer at the dedication of the temple, his benediction after the dedication of the temple. And then we find Psalm 72 is David's prayer for his son, referring to Solomon. Those are the only four things we can find positive about Solomon's life. Did he have great wealth? Yeah, beyond your wildest dreams. Unbelievable. And yet, this is what he says. in Ecclesiastes 5:10, he that loveth silver shall not be satisfied with silver, nor he that loveth abundance with increase. This is also vanity. You know, we have this idea, man, Solomon must have just been an amazing guy because he had everything he wanted. He had an empty life. Yeah, he had everything he wanted physically. He had everything he wanted financially. And yet he looks at life and says, what's the purpose? Because life under the sun, life without regard for God, life without following God and being obedient to God is vanity. It's empty. It's worthless. And that's the reason why the world is longing and looking for some type of hope. Because they tried in everything, just like Solomon did. He tried it in everything. He tried it in pleasure. He tried it in the works that he did. He tried it in all kinds of things. He tried it through music. He tried it through everything. Everything. And he said, it's all worthless. It's all empty. There's no point to it. He was empty. He had unrivaled wisdom. He had unlimited pleasure. He had unsurpassed accomplishments. In chapter 2, you can read about some of the things that he did. He had unimaginable wealth. And yet Solomon looked at his life and said, all is vanity and vexation of spirit. It's all vanity. Chapter 2, verse number 11, then I looked on all the works that my hands had wrought and on the labor that I had labored to do, and behold, all was vanity and vexation of spirit, and there was no profit under the sun. Oh, people would look at Solomon like, what do you mean there's no profit? Look at all that you had. He said, it's pointless without God. It's pointless without any regard for God. This is really the sermon's central theme. I find it ironic. Again, it says the words of the preacher. What a message Solomon is giving. Think about it. It says the words of the preacher, the son of David, king in Jerusalem. And here's the message that he's going to give. Vanity. Everything apart from God is empty. Life is not, it's not worth it apart from following Jesus Christ. Now, have you ever heard that before? You ever heard a preacher stand up here and say, hey, all the things of this world can't satisfy? And you probably looked at the preacher like, well, that's because he's poor. Of course he doesn't think anything can satisfy. He's poor, but if he were rich, he wouldn't say that. Well, here's a preacher who had everything and he's saying it's worthless. It's meaningless. It's pointless. Solomon's final conclusion about life is fear God. Keep his commandments, follow God. Notice the overview here, because we're gonna see some things about the book. But again, Ecclesiastes is attributed to Solomon. He identifies himself as the preacher, the king in Jerusalem, known for wisdom and wealth, experience. But yet, in all of this, the voice that we see in this book reflects a man who has seen it all. Pleasure, success, wisdom, labor, power. And this is all reflecting near the end of life. And the man many call the wisest man to ever live reigned for 40 years and said it's all vanity. It's all vanity and vexation of spirit. The book wrestles honestly with one central question. What is the meaning of life under the sun? What is my purpose here? Right? Is that not a question that even the world asks? What's my purpose here? By the way, and again, you know what we believe about creation and things like that, but when you follow the evolutionary theory, you have no purpose. You have no purpose here. You're just part of some evolutionary chance and cosmos, and it's just gonna continue. You have no purpose. You have no meaning to life. You're just here by chance. Look, friend, can I tell you something? when we go back and look at how God created everything, you're not just here by chance. You're here for a purpose. And the only way we can truly fulfill our purpose in life is to find out what God says about it. And this is what Solomon is saying. He said, I searched for it all. I looked in all the places you can think of. I looked in wisdom. I looked in the works that I can do. I looked in fame. I looked in knowledge. I looked in all these things. And guess what? I didn't find it. I didn't find purpose in those things. That's why he says, fear God and keep his commandments. Why? That's where you're gonna find purpose. That's where you're gonna find your purpose in life. It is through God. Again, it's this conclusion that Solomon has is repeated throughout the book. Vanity of vanities, all is vanity. The word vanity, again, it just means vapor. It's a mist. It's there for a minute and then it's gone. It's temporary. Everything pursued apart from God, whether it's wisdom, pleasure, work, wealth, legacy, whatever it might be, ultimately, it fails to give lasting meaning and purpose to life. If it is apart from God, it doesn't mean anything. It doesn't mean anything. Think about this. Notice what he says here. Look in chapter 2, verse 15. Then I said in my heart, as it happened to the fool, so it happeneth to me. Why was I then more wise? You know what Solomon's saying? I'm gonna die just like a foolish person dies. Our end is the same. You know how much a foolish person takes with them when they die? Nothing. You know how much Solomon took with him when he died? Nothing. Didn't take anything with him. And so look what he says. Then I said in my heart that this is also vanity, for there is no remembrance of the wise more than of the fool forever. Seeing that which now is in the days to come shall all be forgotten. And how dieth the wise man? As the fool. And here's what's sad. Watch these next words. Therefore, I hated life. Solomon, you got it all, man. You got everything. You've got power, you've got money, you've got the world at your feet, people coming from all over the world to pay homage to you. And he says, I hated life. Why? Because he was doing it apart from God. And it doesn't matter what it is in life, whether it's knowledge, whether it's an education, whether it's work, whether it's popularity, whatever it is, when we do it apart for God, you know what we find? It's empty. It's empty. And here's the wisest man that ever lived, and he's trying to give you and I some wisdom. The question is, are we gonna listen? Are we gonna listen to what he says? Or are we going to basically follow in his footsteps and live life apart from God, live life not concerned about the things of God, and end up at the end of our life saying, what was the point? What was the point of it? There's no fulfillment. There's some major themes throughout this book. Again, we don't have time to look at all these different things, but these are just some of the themes that we find in the book of Ecclesiastes. The limits of human wisdom. Yes, wisdom is better than folly, but it cannot explain everything. Solomon wanted to know everything, and he said, you know what I found out? I can't know everything. There are things that we're just not gonna know. Doesn't matter how good technology advances, you know what? We're not gonna know everything. You know why? Because we're not God. It's not wrong to try to learn things. It's not what he's saying. But there's a limit to human wisdom. There's the emptiness of pleasure and achievement. Again, pleasure, possessions, accomplishments, they fail to satisfy. You can read chapter 2, 1 through 11. All these things that he made, I made great works. I builded me houses. I planted me vineyards. I made me gardens and orchards and planted trees. And then it made me pools of water. I got me servants and maidens and had servants born in my house. I also had great possession of great and small cattle above all that were in Jerusalem. I gathered me also silver and gold and the peculiar treasure of kings and of the provinces. I got me men singers and women singers and the delights of the sons of men as the musical instruments and that all sorts. So was I great and increased more than all that were before me in Jerusalem. Also, my wisdom remained with me. Whatsoever mine eye desired, I kept not from them. I withheld not my heart from any joy, for my heart rejoiced in all my labor, and this was my portion of all my labor. You understand? Solomon says, this was it. Man, there was pleasure in it, but it was just fleeting. It was just temporary. It didn't last. It doesn't remain. And this is why he says in verse number 11, then I looked on all the works that my hands had wrought and the labor that I had labored to do. And behold, what do you think he says? All was vanity and vexation of spirit. And there was no profit under the sun. That emptiness, the frustration of work. Now you can relate to that. Right? Frustration at work, right? Hey, work is good, but look, it can't secure lasting meaning. He built all these different things, and yet it didn't satisfy. In fact, what he found was all that he had built was going to be enjoyed by somebody else. And he said, Why did I do this for them? I don't even get to enjoy it. Frustration of work, the certainty of death. We talked about that. We kind of already saw that a little bit. Death is the great equalizer. Doesn't matter if you're a fool. Doesn't matter if you're rich. Doesn't matter if you're poor. Guess what? We're all going to face death. When we die, we leave it all behind. Doesn't matter what you have. Doesn't matter what you have. It all is going to be left. And years to come, nobody will remember. Nobody will remember. Certainty of death. But we also see God's sovereignty over time. God appoints seasons for everything. Humanity longs for eternity. But yet we can't fully grasp God's plan. And so we try to find satisfaction in temporary things when God says they can only be found in eternal things. We also see that enjoyment as a gift from God. Again, there are things that are good about life. How many had lunch today? How many enjoyed lunch today? Hope you did, especially if your wife made it, right? We can enjoy food, right? We can enjoy things about life. There are good things about life, relationships and food and fun things. There are things that we can enjoy about life, but we shouldn't look at those things as the ultimate meaning and purpose to life. And this is what Solomon is teaching. Hey, those things are good, but they're not going to bring satisfaction. No satisfaction there, right? Notice the structure of the book. The structure of the book, there's kind of five areas. We've kind of touched on them briefly here. But the prologue, talking about the problem and meaning of life, we see that in chapter 1, verses 1 through 11. In verse number 11, there's no remembrance of former things, neither shall there be any remembrance of things that are to come with those that shall come after. I've said this before. I mean, even kind of big events, right? I mean, somebody tell me who won the Super Bowl 20 years ago. Off the top of your head. Nobody remembers. Who cares? Right? I mean, somebody tell me, if you could think back, who was it that won the Olympics in 1996? Gold medals! But nobody remembers. Nobody cares anymore, do they? Why? Because it's past. It's in the past. Nobody remembers. Nobody really cares. And yet, what do we find? Everybody thinks that's where satisfaction is going to come from. Well, if I can achieve, if I can be great, if I can do all these things, then I'll really have meaning to life. No, it doesn't work that way. So we find this structure here. We see the experiments in meaning. Again, this is what Solomon does. He experiments. He tries to find anything that will bring satisfaction apart from God. He tries everything, right? And again, Solomon, I believe Solomon started with a love for God, but the Bible tells us that the more wives that he married, they turned his heart away from God. He married these women from other countries who served other gods, and not only were they turning his heart away from God, now he's even making temples for their gods. And we see a complete change in Solomon from coming to God and saying, God, you've blessed me. You've given me this great people, and I don't know how to lead them, and I need understanding, and I need wisdom, to a man saying, I'm just going to try to find purpose and happiness in anything and everything I can try. And he does. You read that through chapter 2 and chapter 1 all the way through chapter 6, and you find this wisdom, pleasure, work, wealth, all of it. And he says it's all vanity. It's all vanity. We see his reflections on life's realities in chapter 6 through chapter 11 about time, injustice, death, uncertainties, right? He talks about there's a time for this and a time for that and all these different things. He reflects on these realities of life. Again, specifically even thinking about death. There's a call to remember God. Look in chapter 11. In chapter 11. When you go to chapter 11, and again, we don't have time to read the whole thing, but when you start in verse number 7, he begins to kind of bring this call to remember God. And moving into chapter 12, he says, remember now thy creator in the days of thy youth, while the evil days come not, nor the years draw nigh, when thou shalt say, I have no pleasure in them. He's saying, hey, as a young person, and that's why I'm so thankful for many of the young people that we have in our church. He says, as a young person, remember your creator in the days of your youth, right? As young people, look, and again, so many times as pastors and preachers and things, we wish we could just, you know, take some of these young people and smack them upside the head, you know? Yeah. You didn't know a pastor wanted to do that, did you? They're looking at me like, why? Because those of us who have lived a few years longer than they have, we see, man, if they could just grab something at a young age, if they could just yield themselves to God, if they would just sell out to God, man, at a younger age, God could use them in such a great way and not have to wait till maybe they get our age. And we're trying to help them to realize, and we're trying, just like the preacher here, remember that creator in the days of thy youth. But here's the thing, it's got to be their choice, just like it was Solomon's choice. Solomon chose to turn away from God. And I'm thankful that our young people, they're in a church that loves the word of God and loves the Lord. But here's the thing, our young people have to make a decision whether they're gonna follow God or not. Young people, you have to understand, your parents cannot force you to follow God. Do you know that? Your parents can't force you to follow God. It's gotta be your choice. They can help you. They can teach you. They can try to help you to understand what God says, but they can't force you to. It has to be your choice. It has to be your decision. Now, you can look at the world, you can think, oh man, but the world says, if I just enjoy life and I have all this fun, wait a minute, here's the wisest man that ever lived, that got to experience everything. What does he say? It's all what?
Vanity.
It's all vanity. Oh, but Pastor, you don't understand. You don't know the friends that I have. You don't know the things that we're gonna do. I guarantee you Solomon went way farther than you will ever go. He experienced more than you and I could ever even imagine. He had more than you and ever I could even dream of having. And what did he say? It's all vanity. All vanity. Here's the thing, are we gonna listen? Are we gonna listen? Are we gonna listen, young people? listen to that it's all vanity? Or are we gonna be like, no, I think I know better. I think I'm smarter than Solomon. I think I know better than God. By the way, these are God's words, not Solomon's, God's. And we have an opportunity to say, hey, Lord, I'm not going to just follow the way that the world goes. I'm not gonna do the things of the world. I want to yield myself to you and I want you to use me. Hey, you think a 13-year-old can't be used by God? You think a 10-year-old can't be used by God? You think a 15-year-old can't be used by God? An 18-year-old? Oh no, friend, they can. If we'll just do like what Solomon said and remember the conclusion of the whole matter, fear God. Remember now thy creator in the days of thy youth. Learn it while you're young so that as you grow and the world tries to deceive you, you'll understand and remember what God says about vanity. It's all vanity. And of course, there's the epilogue, the final conclusion that we see here in chapter 12 about fearing God and keeping his commandments. After all the searching, the questioning, the wrestling that Solomon has done through life, the book ends very clearly, fear God. Fear God, keep his commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. You understand that meaning to life is not found in escaping life's frustrations, but in living reverently before God within what he has given us to do and what he's given us to live. It's interesting when we think of Christ in the book, and this is what really is just impactful here, because if you think about it, obviously there's no mention of Christ here in the book of Ecclesiastes. But Ecclesiastes is a book that prepares the heart for the gospel message. Because Ecclesiastes exposes the bankruptcy of life without God. It's empty. And the only answer to this life is Jesus Christ. That's the only answer. It's not gonna be wealth. It's not gonna be possessions. It's not gonna be your friends. It's not gonna be popularity. It's not gonna be any of those things. Why? Solomon tried it. He tried it. And he says it's all vanity. You see, it drives us to look beyond the sun. Don't just look up here on this earth. Don't just look about what's gonna bring me joy and pleasure here, but look beyond to eternity. Look beyond to judgment. Think about it. Solomon dies. You've had David, who was a king after God's own heart, a man after God's own heart. Then Solomon comes on the scene and he's the wisest man and he tries everything and he basically ends in life saying, vanity of vanities, all is vanity. And then his son comes on the scene. His son's name was Rehoboam. What did Rehoboam do? He wouldn't listen to God. He split the kingdom. From that point on, from Rehoboam, now the kingdom is split in two. Because he wouldn't listen to God. Look, can I just be really honest with you? Where did he learn not to listen to God? Now, we can blame Rehoboam all we want. We can say, well, Rehoboam, it's your fault, man. You should have listened to God. Well, that's true. I'm not saying he's not without blame, but where did he learn that he didn't need to listen to God? From the wisest man who ever lived. And yet at the end of his life, the wisest man who ever lived said, I blew it. I had an opportunity to do something great for God. And other than really build the temple, what did I do? What did I do? It's all vanity. Vanity and vexation of spirit. You see, it drives us to see that life in Christ is abundant. Life in Christ is where true satisfaction is going to come from. Ecclesiastes matters today when we think about it because it gives, we could say, modern disillusionment, burnout, cynicism. We see it all right here in the book of Ecclesiastes. It helps us to answer the hard questions about life. What are some of the, where does satisfaction really come from? What's the meaning really of life? Well, he helps answer some of those questions. It teaches believers to enjoy life, but we have to be careful that we don't idolize it. Remember, we are here temporarily. This is just temporary. And if we know Christ as our Savior, the things of this world shouldn't be the things that we're living for. It should be the eternal things that we're living for. Again, you read through the book of Ecclesiastes, you're going to find a man that is broken. You're going to find a man that had everything he could ever imagine. At the end, he is a man that is empty. A man that lives with regret, wishing, boy, if I could go back and do it again. You can't. You understand that? You can't go back and do it again. And this is why it's so important for us to listen to this message, to listen to this wisdom. Ecclesiastes calls us to anchor our lives in the fear of God. Fear God. The conclusion of the matter, fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. But notice what he says in verse 14, for God shall bring every work into judgment with every secret thing, whether it be good or whether it be evil. God says he's going to judge it all. There's nothing that you can do and think that God doesn't know about it. There's nothing, whether it's in your mind or whether it's in your words, whether it's in your actions, there's nothing you can do or say that God doesn't know. And God says, one day you are going to stand account for it. We're going to give an account for what we have done. Paul talks about it very clearly about the judgment seat of Christ. We'll give an account very almost exactly word for word to what Solomon says here. We'll give an account of all the things that we have done, whether it be good or whether it be evil. What have we done for Christ? If we know we're saved, we know we're a Christian, are we living for this life or are we living for Christ? Who are we living for? In one sentence, if I could sum it up, Ecclesiastes teaches that life without God is empty. But life lived in reverent trust before him, though we don't know what tomorrow is going to bring, will bring true meaning and joy and purpose in life. If we're willing to just listen to the message, fear God. Why? Because everything else is vanity. Vanity, vanity. He starts with it. And he ends with it. Chapter 12, verse number 8. Vanity of vanity, saith the preacher, all is vanity. What are we living for? This life, the things that everybody thinks is important, that Solomon spent his life longing for, and came up at the end and said, it's all worthless. Or will we live for Jesus Christ? Father, I pray you'd help us, Lord, to truly grasp and understand the message of the book of Ecclesiastes. Lord, it's a warning, not just to those Jews maybe reading the Old Testament, but it's a warning to us living in the New Testament today. Because the world has deceived us into thinking that if we'll just get possessions and money and wealth and popularity and pleasure and all these different things, that that's where true satisfaction and joy really comes from. And yet here's a man, started well, started with a heart for God, and yet did not follow God. And he allowed his heart to be turned away from God. And he sought satisfaction through everything that we could ever imagine. And at the end of his life, he looks and says, it's all empty. It's all worthless. It's all vanity. And here's my conclusion, he says. Fear God and keep his commandments. For this is the whole duty of man. Life apart from God, life apart from Jesus Christ is empty and worthless. Lord, I pray you'd help our young people, help our adults, Lord, to understand and realize that you have a purpose for us. And that purpose and that joy and meaning in life will only be found when we follow you. Lord, help us to tune out the things of the world, not to listen to them, but to listen to what you have told us in your word. With their heads bowed and their eyes closed, no one looking about this evening. I'm not going to have anyone stand at all tonight, but I do want to give just an opportunity. Maybe God has spoken to your heart through some aspect of the message tonight. Maybe God has spoken. Maybe you've been believing the lies of the world and thinking that true satisfaction and pleasure and all comes from the things of the world. Now, listen to the words of Solomon, a man who was empty at the end of his life, who had everything during his life, and he says, it's all vanity. Fear God. Fear God. Maybe it's just the piano just begins to play softly. Maybe there's something that God is speaking to your heart. Are you willing to fear God, to trust God, to follow God? Have we got so caught up in the world's ideas, money, possessions, popularity, friends, pleasures, all of that? That's what we've been thinking brings true satisfaction. And yet, friend, if you would, look at the world and guess what you find? There's no meaning. There's no purpose. There's no satisfaction. Why would we listen to the world when God's told us exactly what we need to know?